I'm the second time at Taylor Moses meeting, and it's very nice to be among people who share. I hope we understand point of view. And here I don't need probably to explain that tailored methods are powerful, are convenient, robust, and they work very well. But this is not a common point, say, in the community of people in numerics. It's extremely difficult to explain to people in numerics why should we work with high-order Taylor representation. And there are few objections which are very serious. I mean, these people know what they say about. The first objection is singularities. Once when I presented a Taylor model-based method to solve Laplace equation with very, very high accuracy, I would say that it's higher than one needs. This high accuracy is simply not is not needed to anyone. Of course, this was a joke. The real problem is that mostly we have to work not with smooth data, but with data with singularities. The second is noise. Noise sensitivity. The third issue is complexity. Let me very shortly say what is my feeling, I mean, with some experience. First of all, indeed, this is a very important issue. Mostly, in most of problems which arise in theoretical questions and in practical problems, we have to deal with functions with singularities. So they're not smooth, so we cannot expect they can be represented everywhere by Taylor methods. A good example are just images, natural images. But there are many other examples of this sort. Say, shock waves, not to go too far away. I don't plan today to enter this question. Let me just say that I believe that exactly here, in a kind of ideology which has been under development in this Taylor models approach, it can help very well, because just to say that to overcome singularities, we simply take low order methods, which is, by the way, the answer sometimes thrown out by people in numerics. This is not an answer. We simply put things under the carpet. We don't. Because if there are singularities, and of course high-order methods become very, very unstable near singularities, but if we work with low-order methods, it is just an illusion that we are done better. We simply do not want to know what is going on. Probably, I believe that the correct way is to take singularities as the most important object existing in this scene, and this is done with the help of so-called normal forms. Okay, since I don't want today to go into the normal forms have appeared today in some talks. Models, not Taylor, they're very convenient models which capture singularities of this or other sorts. So I do believe that singularities enter very naturally in the framework of Taylor. Taylor models, and some work has been in this direction, but today I don't want to go into this question. Now, noise sensitivity. It's well known that high-order methods are extremely oversensitive to noise, so it's difficult to apply in any noisy problem, and most of practical problems are very noisy. So, two remarks. The first is that The first is that Taylor methods of order k are not more sensitive to the noise than any other k-th order scheme. The sensitivity is exactly of the same order. So we don't have a worse problem in application of Taylor methods. Based models, but this is only one remark. I think this is one of the deepest problem in general in application of high order methods. So it has to be considered and somehow confronted. And I'll try to say something in this direction. So the complexity of these methods is a concern. I think all the experience we have, in particular, especially the results presented in the first talk today, show that indeed they have a higher complexity in local computations. We use locally not arithmetics, but jet algebra, or symbolic algebra, or differential algebra. This is local complexity. But we are more than paid off by tremendous simplification of global computations, and the total complexity gain is very strong. This I would say is a fact which is not so difficult to explain and even to prove if you choose an appropriate model for complexity. So I will not touch this part, in spite of the fact that it is probably the strongest part of Taylor-based methods. Okay. So this is a kind of introduction, and singularities I do not consider. So I'll address to some extent the problem of the noise. But before I go to, I mean, the main point of the talk is to present certain mathematical tools which are very relevant here. And these mathematical tools are the following. So it's Kolmogorov's epsilon entropy, Whitney extension, and the say generalized Hermite fitting, Hermite interpolation. So let me describe very shortly what are these mathematical tools and what is the story about. The first problem is the following. Assuming we are given CK function, the question is, what is the best way to memorize this function with a given accuracy? This question was investigated by Kolmogorov, and the answer is that a Taylor polynomial based representation is the best. I would like to go into some details here. It is not a very difficult theorem. But at least to my point, it's very deep, and this was a starting point of a lot of investigations. Whitney extension. This was done in Kolmogorov, by the way, it is around 1956. Whitney around 1932. The question is the following. Is this very natural in Taylor approximation? We are given a certain set, we are given Taylor polynomials. At each point, we have a Taylor polynomial. The question, it is not exactly the problem. It's very close to the original Whitney setting, but I put it a little bit informally. So the question is how to characterize those fields of Taylor polynomials which can be extended into a CK function. And here just maybe of Taylor polynomials, maybe of order k, or maybe of order smaller than k. This may be even just values. So this is a Whitney classical problem, to characterize on closed sets those functions which are traces of ck functions on the entire space. And this turns out to be a very difficult mathematical problem. Only recently, in the last maybe 5 years, this was a very significant progress, and part was done here by Pierre Milman and at Beeston, and the collaborators. Later, Charlie Pfefferman entered to this problem, and by now he gave more or less a complete solution. Maybe I will not go into precise details, and I will not describe the problem, but this is a very difficult problem. And you see from this, the problem is to characterize fields of Taylor polynomials, which are traces of usual smooth functions. And now, the last problem is the following. It is assume we are given a finite number of Taylor polynomials. Now we would like to interpolate them. We are given a finite number of Taylor polynomials, and we would like to interpolate them, to find one polynomial of higher degree which fits in the best way this this data.
Mm-hmm. I'm not really understanding this problem. Are you assuming that there is an interval remainder term at each point? Or are you
using coefficients and not natural? Okay. I consider both possible things. Problem where the number of the data, the dimension of the data is exactly the degree of the polynomial. But the main point here, exactly the point which probably I don't have time to address, is the following: that this is what is called Hermite interpolation, a classical interpolation technique, which is well known to be highly unstable. You can do it, but when you have to invert matrices, which are very ill-posed, so practically it's not a good idea to do this. So a good idea, a better idea, which is very well known, is to take a little bit more data than, and then when you look for a polynomial of a degree which is smaller than the dimension of the data, you cannot guarantee exact fitting. So you just look, say, for the best least square approximation. So I would like, actually this is the main question. The problem which I tried to address, but today I'm pretty sure that I have no time to present it, is the following. If you take instead of the, maybe I'll use this. Let's consider the usual interpolation problem, even not Hermite interpolation. The usual interpolation, you have 10 points, and you are n plus 1 points, and you consider polynomial of degree n, which exactly fits the data. It's well known the matrix which appears here is so-called Hilbert matrix, and its eigenvalues are well known. You know what you have to invert. Now you take n big points. And still, but still, the polynomial of degree is small. You cannot fit exactly this data anymore. But you ask for the least fitting, the least square deviation polynomial. It's well known classically that this what has to be done, because this is a much better, much more stable problem. However, the exact estimates of stability of this problem, to my best knowledge, were not obtained. It's a question of, pretty recently, a couple of papers appeared related to this question. It's really very extremely classical problem, but probably not solved till today. Specifically, I'm interested in the problem when you replace this data by the Taylor data. So not only values, but say Taylor polynomials of certain degree k. So a kind of Hermit fitting. This is, I think, one of very important questions for efficiency of Taylor methods. Answer your question. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So. No. Kolmogorov used the notion of metric entropy, which is the following. We have a relatively compact metric space X. The covering number M of epsilon X is a minimal number of epsilon both covering X. So this notion certainly was not was introduced many years before Kolmogorov. I can trace it at least to Minkowski, but probably something like this was known even earlier. And this appeared today in dynamical topological entropy. This number just appeared. It's asymptotic, has been computed in iterations. Okay, what was Kolmogorov's remark? Notice that that if you take epsilon entropy, H epsilon X, which is binary logarithm of M, this is the amount of information we need to memorize X up to epsilon. This is trivial. I mean, nothing deep, because here is the space X. Here are the epsilon balls covering X. So this is the number of these balls. So how many bits do we need to memorize this? Just a binary logarithm of this number. So this was the idea. But in 1956, Kolmogorov was very impressed by years before this, or 3 years, Kolmogorov was very strongly impressed by works of Claude Shannon. He liked very much Shannon's approach to entropy, to information, capacity of information channels, and so on. He started to develop it further. So at this time, Kolmogorov, in fact, realized the relation of this notion with the more classical probability entropy, which is the sum of logarithms of probabilities, and which was introduced by Shannon. And I don't want to go into this history, but now when we start to iterate this amount in dynamical system, we get the topological entropy which has appeared in a couple of talks before. But Kolmogorov noticed also that there are many interesting questions where we don't need to iterate it. We have enough. It is important to compute this by itself. And the question was the following. Consider the class M, N, K, the class of functions, CK functions on the unit ball in N space, so of N variables, such that all the derivatives of order zero norm is bounded by 1. So we take CK functions with all the derivatives bounded by 1 on n-dimensional ball. Now, we take the norm, to make this metric space, we take the norm 0, which is maximum absolute value of f. Notice the functions are CK, but the norm is C0. This is important because otherwise we don't have a local compactness. So. And the theorem of Kolmogorov is that M or entropy H of M N K epsilon is of order 1 over epsilon to the power N over K. This is Kolmogorov's theorem. It expresses the amount of information. How many bits do we need to memorize a given CK function up to accuracy epsilon? This is not a difficult theorem, by the way. Probably the best I can do now is I'll give a almost complete proof of this theorem. But as many things which Kolmogorov did, this solved a difficult problem. The problem was two words. The problem was related to Hilbert's certain problem. It concerned compositions of functions. What functions can be represented by means of compositions? I'll not enter into this story, but let me just say that Vitushkin, about 5 years before Kolmogorov, got in very difficult way certain restrictions on possible compositions of smooth functions. With this notion, Kolmogorov was able on half a page to prove all the results about Vitushkin's results and much more about composition of smooth functions. And since then, this complexity or entropy or information computation became the most natural tool in many, many questions of approximation and also dynamics, but I do not touch this direction. Okay, so the proof. First of all, this theorem is not, I do not want to represent this theorem as a justification of Taylor methods, in no way. If you take a rectangular domain, take any kind of analytic approximation you can imagine. Take polynomial approximation, take Taylor approximation, take Fourier approximation. All these approximation tools, if you work accurately, will give you this bound on the entropy. So it is not specific. But and moreover, I think everyone is absolutely correct. Global polynomial approximation works, but it is much more difficult. But the local Taylor approximation works very well. So let's subdivide it into pieces of the size h. Let's subdivide it into pieces of the size h. And on each piece, let's take its Taylor polynomial. So on piece number I, let's take pi, Taylor polynomial of our function. We know that on this piece, f minus pi is of order, okay, the remainder term. I don't need here to write it exactly. Under this assumption that all the derivatives are bounded by 1, this remainder term is of order a constant h to the power k. So to have this, let me just, to simplify, just h to the power k. I want this to be epsilon. I want this approximation to be of accuracy epsilon. This gives me h is of order epsilon to the power 1 over k. Then I ask, how many pieces do I need? Okay, each piece has size h. The domain is n-dimensional. So I have 1 over h to the power n, which is 1 over epsilon to the power n over k. So this is the number of bit points in my Taylor grid I need to approximate my function. Now, how many bits I need to memorize this function with required accuracy on each piece? Okay, I have to memorize each coefficient with accuracy epsilon, and say the dynamical range is 1 because of this restriction. So at each point, I have certain constant over epsilon choice of Taylor coefficients. So what is the total number of possibilities? I get the following. For the total number, of choices or bits of choices, I have C over epsilon. This is at each grid point, and this is the number of grid points. So I have this terrible expression 1 over epsilon n over k. So three store building. But this is the life. I give the upper bound, but this is also the lower bound. It's very easy. I'll not go to this. So if I take log, this is m. Sorry. This not yet this. I'll explain the point. M of epsilon this m and k is less or equal than this. So the entropy, which is binary logarithm, is less or equal than 1 over epsilon n over k of 1 over epsilon. So it is not what I want. In Kolmogorov theorem, we have this expression without logarithm. And lower bounds, which can be easily produced by bump functions, give this. So this term has to be corrected. How can we correct it? The idea is the following, and here I'll not go into detail, I'll just explain. Let's take two neighboring Taylor polynomials. Here is one and here is another. They are not independent. If our function is CK smooth, these two neighboring polynomials correlate very strongly. And this is what is called Wheaton discrepancy. So this leads us to Wheaton extension problem. This is Wheaton discrepancy. It is not a difficult formula, but I don't want to. I have no possibility to write it exactly. Let me just say the following. Wheaton has written it in 32, so I don't know. Kolmogorov doesn't mean in Kolmogorov's paper there are no references to Wheaton. Maybe he didn't know, but it is not too difficult. A nice point which was discovered by Kolmogorov is the following: that if we interpret correctly, if we use this polynomial as a prediction for this polynomial, the remaining choice is bounded. It doesn't depend on epsilon. It is another constant C1. Here, if we do naively it, at each point we have 1 over epsilon choices. If we do it cleverly, correctly, it turns out that we have only a finite number of choices independently on epsilon. And this is exactly the step which replaces logarithm of 1 over epsilon by logarithm of C1 by constant. So this completes the proof of Kolmogorov theorem and also somehow points out the bridge between Kolmogorov's theorem and the Wheaton theorem. Okay, in fact, I completed my minimal program. Let me just finish with the second part of the talk, which I will not present here. Is that the question is it possible to use all this ideology to develop certain numerical methods to solve PDEs? And the answer, okay, of course the answer is possible, but we can use Wheaton theorem in developing these methods, and maybe next time. So thank you. Okay.